This podcast is supported by Siemens, your partner for industrial-grade AI.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of our Industrial AI podcast. My name is Robert Weber, and it's a pleasure to talk to
Peter Seeberg. Good morning, Robert. Good morning, afternoon, evening to any of you listener from wherever you are.
Good morning, Peter. Do you want to start?
Sure. Do we want to look back to the Hanover Fair, maybe?
Yes, we can do that.
How was that? Was it last week already? You spent a couple of days. There's two, three things. You and I together did we call it the Industrial AI Day on the Thursday?
Yes.
Right. When I think back, the first discussion I recall was the one where we had Yannis from Beckhoff and Boris from Siemens, right?
Exactly.
And we managed to not talk about agents for how long? 25 minutes?
25 minutes. This was quite good. Yeah.
Was that actually the how we had called the discussion anything else but agents or something?
Yeah, something like this. Yeah.
So we didn't. Now, then we started talking about agents, and the thing that I recall, and I want to be careful quoting Boris correctly, but I think he questioned if we could, at least today, I guess, if we could apply agents at all in an industrial setting, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, just a week or two before, we talked about the source of industrial AI and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I went around with him also over the fair just for a bit of time. And the important thing is that he had started with industrial grade, I believe. So his point, I think, was that, you know, you're going to have these certification processes, right? And if you're in the middle of a certification and you're repeating whatever kind of job you're doing, the first thing the agent says, go left, the other time the agent says go right, and if so, probably for a good reason. Whatever is the background that the agent knows more than the human at that time, right? You know, I was thinking of what you have been saying in the past when we talk logistics. You've been saying, you know, if you know that there's a truck, you know, an hour from your factory, and you know exactly that the truck is going to take 50 minutes longer, you know, maybe you just want to change your production, at least your priority of your production, what comes to the end line of the production. That was just an idea. And I think his point was, if it goes left the first time, right, the second time, then maybe you cannot get a certification approved. And he wasn't using the term, but I think what he's talking about is this non-deterministic behavior, which I then thought about, haven't we discussed this? And will we most certainly not be discussing this a lot? And actually, we had Stefan Milz, if I'm correct, from Spleen Lab.
Yes.
And if I'm also correct, he has some IP in this area. And I also recall that you went to the security conference with SICK, and maybe there that topic of
safety conference.
I was a safety.
It's not security, it's safety. Yep.
Oh, huge difference.
Yes.
It was the safety conference. And as far as I recall, this topic of probability-based safety. Yes, security is something different. I think it's a huge topic. So I'm not sure that we discussed it that far. I don't think we actually did, but that's how I brought it further in my own brain, so to speak. And then at the end, I was going to think, oh, well, you know, Stefan is going to be in the Alps. Boris is going to be in the Alps, so at least they should be talking. They should be talking while there.
And SICK is also in the Alps, so the SICK CTO is also there. So they will have a discussion on safety.
Yeah, so, but I was also not surprised, but maybe I was, and that's very good. because maybe I had not thought about it. Maybe many times, because we are, in all modesty, you and I, at the forefront of things happening in industrial AI, and then when people who are specialists in their own area and have their own experience, when they share things, I think, oh, oh, sure. Oh, interesting. Yeah, sure. Because, you know, and more so probably me looking always very far in the future. And if we talk agents all the time, or we talk agents, we come to in a moment. It's never about expecting things to happen just, you know, tomorrow. You know, maybe it's going to take another year or two or whatever. And for that reason, I do believe. So I think when Boris says, you know, they cannot work, I think he's saying they cannot work today in our current setup with the current certification approach.
Certification means safety for you, right?
Well, I think whatever process you have to go through. So in the end, to get some kind of stamp, if it's a TÜV or whatever stamp you get, the organizations making sure that if the customer is going to buy something from a provider, that there's going to be an organization in between who has put a stamp on it. And that stamp in the future can be related to, of course, you know, this huge thing of the AI Act, which we have talked about.
Agents Insight.
5 years ago, and sometimes maybe we'll do it again, I don't know. But that's very similar. You know, somebody is going to probably need to, and that's, no, we're not going to talk about that in detail. But 5 years ago, I produced this coming from Intel Insight, and said, you know, AI Insight. So somebody's going to need to have to give you, as the provider of the equipment of the solution, a stamp such that your potential buyer sees, okay, you know, is this organization, which is an official organization, they know all about, as an example, AI Act, and they have looked at it, and they tell me if I buy it that everything is fine, you know, theoretically.
Yeah. Coming back to our discussion at Hannover Messe, I was surprised that Beckhoff showed a new IPC with NVIDIA components for around 2,000 euros. So it was very, very interesting. So it's not the newest NVIDIA chip generation, but 2,000 euros. Wow, that's a nice price for an industrial PC with NVIDIA components. Yeah.
Which normally costs, I have no idea, a couple of hundred euros.
That's interesting. Yeah. So it's a step going AI on the shop floor, edge AI, a very interesting approach by Beckhoff. Yeah.
You did ask him if they were making money at the moment with AI.
Yes, both said no.
And his clear answer was no, right?
Yeah.
But then again, of course, indirectly, they will be making money, or they should be making money. You know, if we're going to integrate AI, just let's look at this example, because I hadn't seen the specific use case. But of course, the customer is only going to buy this IPC instead of the one without NVIDIA or whatever future graphics AI processor, if this solution is going to bring, you know, in the end, whatever, you know, less trouble, more product out at higher quality. So at the end, the customer, the potential buyer, must be able to say, okay, if I'm going to buy this one, then XYZ is not going to happen, or something else is going to happen. And for that reason, I'm willing to pay an extra, whatever, 1,000 euros, 1,500 euros, because in the end, I'm going to get more product out at a higher quality, as an idea.
Exactly. Coming back to Boris, Siemens won the Hermes Award. Congratulations to the...
Yeah, I saw that. You were there, I believe, when they were awarded.
No, I already posted our latest episode, because we already recorded an episode with Rainer Brehm, I think, a few months ago, on the topic of the industrial co-pilot or AI co-pilot. So we were quite right when it comes to new technologies. And now congratulations to the whole Siemens team. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great thing. The Hermes Award is a big thing, isn't it? Is it by the Hannover Messe, or who is it?
Yeah, it's a jury of scientists, researchers, journalists, and it's a quite big thing, yeah. So what else do you have? I have some notes here, AutoML ecosystem.
That's what I had as well.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Please go on.
Oh, yeah, Marius and Marcel talked about AutoML, right? That brought me back, actually, on the stage, I recall, to an article I wrote must have been almost like 10 years ago, I guess, with Oliver Nigema.
Ah, Oliver, greetings.
Professor, doctor, you recall Oliver. Those of you that do recall Oliver, they have been listening to us for 6 years.
Loyal fans, yeah.
Because I look back now, I was looking for an article that I wrote, and that's the actual topic. But then I saw that actually in our inauguration podcast, the very first podcast we ever did in German, so is that 6 years ago?
Yeah.
We brought an interview with Oliver on the topic of artificial intelligence in automation. And sometime around the same time, I believe, maybe even before then, I think I was invited by Oliver to do a presentation somewhere. And that's where we decided we're going to do an article. And there were three, you know, approaches. So Oliver would do, I think it's fair to say, maybe the old-fashioned AI approach. Then there was this guy, I'm not sure if you recall him. I've been finding his name. Maybe his name was Marcus. But then this morning on LinkedIn, I saw that I have 335 Marcus. So I didn't want to, I didn't easily find him. You don't know who I mean.
No. Normally, I will help Peter with the name.
Then I did. Then I did the new thing. And the new thing was doing AutoML. And I do recall that, you know, Oliver was kind of okay, we're just going to show three approaches. And when that came back to me, it was like standing, on the stage later on together with the guys when we talked about things and democratization of AI, and that's what AutoML, and I was really thinking about that AutoML has been some kind of predecessor, right, to Gen AI. It was always about the auto thing. You could almost say that auto is very similar to Gen. Now, I don't want to become philosophical, but it was always about, you know, here I give a tool that is at a very much higher level than a normal algorithm. The algorithm is for the data scientist. And, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, the data scientist was moving knobs, you know, with the algorithms. And then we move further and further. And then I believe it was AutoML. And that has been around for, and I need to be careful, maybe 5 or 10 years until then, 2 years ago, meanwhile, 3 years ago, we suddenly had large language models. You know, we then had Gen AI. So I believe it's almost like a development in a very similar direction, part of the big Gen AI today.
Yeah, and Marius explained a bit. We already recorded an episode with him, so I highly recommend to listen to the episode with Marius about AutoML, because his opinion is that you will need more AutoML in the future when it comes to, coming back, certification topics, and when it comes to reinforcement learning, because reinforcement learning is a beast. And that's a nice quote by Marius, and I really like the quote. So yeah, reinforcement learning is a beast, and maybe we need more AutoML to handle this beast. Yeah.
So, right, and Marius has become one of the official AutoML drivers, exactly. I believe. So when you go to the AutoML org, you see him next to Frank.
Greetings, Frank.
Frank,
yeah.
Was called out in, I shared with you yesterday, Andrew Wang's deep learning newsletter with his Tapi event, right?
Yeah, exactly. Now, Frank is an entrepreneur, you know, not an AutoML guy anymore. Okay. I'm not sure, but when I go through my LinkedIn feed or through my X feed, I always see Frank as an entrepreneur now. Yeah.
Okay, that's good.
But I was surprised, because then there was a presentation, and I was very happy about this presentation, because not everything has to be brand new and not everything has to be agentic, because Audi still uses LSTM for weld analysis. And that was very impressive. So they're still using the LSTM algorithm. And I already called the Audi guys to say, yeah, we should record an episode about that soon. And yeah, that was an interesting approach by Audi and Fraunhofer IPA together with...
And what did they say? Did you recall asking, you know, if they had considered moving to the next level with XLSTM as well?
I'm not sure. I will ask them in the podcast. Yeah.
Okay.
But they are quite happy with the solution. So never change a running system if it works, right?
Sure, that topic comes up many times. There was a big thing that's already again a year ago maybe, where and that was all about, you know, we get hundreds, you know, tens if not hundreds of new papers every week, every day, and what sometimes is forgotten is to compare your solution with the baseline.
Exactly.
And the baseline being, for example, LSTM. You know, if in the specific areas we know that, you know, specific approaches have become in the past a standard, and if you want to say that you're better, so let's say TAP BFN, if you want to show TAP BFN being better in a specific area than what has been to date, I guess, ARIMA, for example, a state-of-the-art solution, then you have to compare it to the baseline and show, okay, I'm 20% better, I'm 100% better. Yeah.
Exactly. What else do you have? I have some good news.
Please share the good news.
Yeah, I have a good news. Janos will once again be our partner of our AI in the Alps event in July. Thanks a lot to the guys, to Daniel and his team. Looking forward to seeing you there. And you already know you're our second partner, Hannover Messe. So thanks to our colleagues in Hannover. And we're very happy to welcome Janos too in the Alps. So thanks a lot.
That's a big topic. Sure, there is this topic of whatever politics. I never like to be too political, but we all know things happening on a global level. And then there's many times these question marks on, and then things about what in our environment, European technology. And then, of course, you see now many, many times you do see that there's alternatives too. So again, this is not about, you know, suggesting to be moving away from certain other cloud technologies. But at the same time, most certainly, yeah, we all of us always talk about and know that there's a handful of US providers, AWS, Google, Microsoft Azure. I assume that they are still the number 1, 2, and 3 by huge scale. But nevertheless, there are solutions which I do not know in detail about. Maybe we should look at that at some point in time and thinking about that. That was a discussion we had. Was it still part also of the Boris Yannis discussion where the topic was about if we it was all about, and I think you started it.
It was about AI factories tokenize the world. That was the topic, right?
Right.
The NVIDIA message, yeah.
Right. And then you said inference. And then we talked about, what is inference? And you just said, okay, now Backhoff has this IPC, including not top, but second generation maybe, but still expensive enough, let's call it AI chip. That's one way to do it. And the other thing to do it, and that's where we did talk about determinism as well, which I was involved in, that's more than 10 years ago, and that was actually in Stuttgart at that time. And they were at that time talking about the cloud, and that's the topic we were now talking about. Can I control a factory, so PLC, virtual PLC control?
Virtual PLC, yep.
From the cloud. And at that time, it was clear, no, you cannot, because I was backing up a cloud solution on my notebook, and I was leaving home, and I just made sure that my notebook would stay on and everything, and I came back, and there must have been a glitch in the network connection, and maybe it's only a millisecond, but like if we talk deterministic, so I came back and it had stopped everything. Now I don't want the factory to stop because of a millisecond glitch in my connection. That's why at that time it was always said. And I think we had the discussion that, sure, you can do it. I mean, the standard way is deterministic on your edge. And then I think we said, okay, you probably cannot run it out of the cloud that is in, you know, maybe 7,000 kilometers, but you maybe can run it at least on your own premise. You know, if you say, and call that what is it then? We say Rechencenter, let's say it's a small cloud, you know, it's a number of servers, whatever they are. And that's where you can still do it. Or then, and that's how we came to this, you use Jonas cloud that is maybe close enough to use so that even you can do deterministic communication.
And when you talk to Daniel, he always tells you the story that Donald Trump is the best salesman in the moment for Jonas. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, really?
So, salesman of the month. Yeah.
The other thing I have is MCP, MCP, MCP.
MCP and A2A.
Oh, that's the next level. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll talk to Colin next week. And I did see that Vlad Larjev, right? He's moving up one level, agent on agent protocol. I was just talking this morning to Colin from ARC, which I'll do the official interview with next week. I'm
really looking forward to this episode. Yeah.
Yeah, my biggest question has been, I'm not going to give the answer. Some of you may have seen it, but then, you know, just wait until we're going to air him. But my question, and I think Colin took it up as well, it's in the end, it's like, does MCP replace existing standards? Like, for example, the podcast we do, OPC UA, or is it designed to complement them? As I say, I'm not going to give you the answer. And then,
spoiler.
A day or two ago, Vlad then comes up with the next level. So it's not just connecting, having agents connect in a standard way to data sources. I think that's the best way to put it, but also connecting agents to agents, right? And I haven't gone into the details. And actually, that was the answer that Colin gave to me as well. You know, things are going too fast, you know. Everybody's running like a weird chicken. We're trying to understand what MCP is all about. And then the next day we get ready the next version. And then the next question is, okay, if it's agent by agent, is there another level possible?
Yeah.
Why should we stay with that one? Is there another agent level going to come? So I'm going to first try to understand MCP and what it does to us, what it's going to be able to do in an industrial environment. And that's why I asked the question, OPC UA. OPC UA is not the only, but it's more so in Europe than in the United States, where it has actually originated more so de facto standard. There's other protocols, OPC UA, more like an architecture. So looking forward to see what Colin has to say there.
When I saw Vlad's post on LinkedIn, I got field bus war wipes. Do you remember the field bus war wipes, you know?
That's 15 years ago or what?
Oh, more than 15 years, I think.
Oh, but you recall that you were writing about it that time?
Yeah. I wrote about field bus war, yeah. So it's coming back. I had these vibes, you know, MCP, A2A, what's the next one and who's better and stuff like that, yeah.
I've spending a major part of my life on protocols, on communication, yeah, because I work with Softing, one of the industrial protocol, communication protocol providers. And yes, I do recall, and I had only joined them. So that's around that time. And I was in the middle of a meeting, and I think it was here at Munich Airport. And I was in the middle of that fight. Really, it was called, as you say, it was called the war of the communication protocol war, whatever, the field bus protocol war. And in that room, they were shouting. They were shouting at each other from left to right. Yeah.
So maybe we will see history repeats itself. Yeah. We will see the same with MCP and A2A and what else is coming.
And that's only one. And I do recall that later on, because that was kind of part of my job, I think, or I would be doing presentations. And then I was looking and say, okay, industrial is only one market segment. And then we have medical. And then we have retail. And we have whatever. So, and I think I looked at maybe 6 or 7 markets, or maybe there were 10 markets. And I said, each of these markets have 10, they have 100, but each of them 10 important protocols. So that's already 100 or 1,000. And which of these protocols? Because then MCP is going to be one at the very top, right? MCP, I mean, we are looking at the industrial use case of it, right? And other people will be looking, well, what can I do with MCP in healthcare? What can I do with MCP in an economical environment, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that is still, from that perspective, exactly as you say, it's coming back. And it is about what is then the importance of the protocols that are a standard in a specific market segment. And what will that do to them? Or is the other one, like MCP or the agent-to-agent, do they always sit on top, on top, on top, which is...
But now we see new drivers, not the industrial companies, pushing the field bus wars. So we have new drivers, Anthropic, Google, for a new era, for a new age of agentic AI, also for the industrial sector. That's interesting because the traditional communication in the factory was organized by, you mentioned, Softing and the other guys, yeah?
Yeah, well, and the other very big thing is that, you know, that's what Gen AI, better, what we know as the large language models, what they are capable of doing for us, whatever technology is behind it. But if we, and I think there is these two, maybe there is OpenCUA, maybe there's ROS is the same for the robot, right? And maybe if today, I'm sure if you're studying, you know, to do something with robots, then, and like in a programming environment kind of thing, you need to understand the language that the robot talks. And I think that is the potential huge difference, that what is changing. And whenever we talk about these things, the people that know the languages, they are very frustrated, or they're very, oh no, that cannot be. And I'm never saying that you should not be, you know, learning ROS 1, 2, 3, whatever the development is, as only one example. The same thing for all the other languages. But at the same time, it's the large language models are opening up the potential to communicate with robots or with any other piece of equipment that until now we could only talk to by means of a protocol. We can now talk to, you know, as at least theoretically, in our own language, in English, in German, in whatever language, as long as the tools that are in between, they can be agents, they can be whatever translators they are. And that's, I think, what you are saying. That's typically where the big tech and other companies come from, because they say, okay, I just want to tell the robot what to do and it should be doing it.
Mm-hmm. Let's get to the main part, Peter.
Oh, yeah. No, I still have one.
Yeah.
I went to the Bauma 2 days ago. Bauma is the world's largest exhibition.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Not only for building equipment, right? Cranes, huge excavators.
It was for you like a candy store, right?
Exactly. But there was this, there was actually this autonomous wheel loader, small, really small. But I was there with my grandchildren. And they stopped. Anyway, you can't walk very far with them. I thought I was gonna walk 10 kilometers a day. We only walked in a radius of 50 meters, I believe, but we saw these huge, but they stopped with this very small wheel loader, and it was autonomous, and it was exactly what we were just talking about. It's like I want to tell the robot, you know, pick up the red ball, and that's exactly what they were doing. The wheel loader was giving the task to go for the red ball and pick it up. That was amazing. So, yeah, I had been waiting for the other autonomous thing. And my final thing is that what I almost thought funny, while we put live yesterday the Fraunhofer study on humanoid robotics,
yeah,
and Simon Schmidt, he does see a potential future, but he says today the gap to relative to what a human can do is huge. So he says it's going to take some time. Actually, BMW in Spartanburg, they have this figure humanoid robot, right? And they are looking for a humanoid robot operations associate. And if you're interested in that job, you will work at the forefront of our customer fleet operations, deploying figure humanoid robots into automotive manufacturing use cases, et cetera, et cetera. So those of you interested in working with a figure robot in the BMW factory in the United States, in Spartanburg, feel free to apply. There you go.
Yeah, perfect. So let's get to the main part. Miroslav is already waiting there. He's from Poland, and I met him on the plane on the way to Vancouver last year. And then we recorded an episode. It's about process mining, Gen AI, supply chains, ERP systems, and many other topics. So I'm really looking forward to the episode with Miroslav. Peter, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much. We will see us again in May at the AI with Purpose Summit by Siemens, I think.
Yep, sounds good to me. And you're going to be checking out if everything is fine in the Alps in between, I understand.
Yeah, perfect. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. See you then, Robert.
My name is Robert Weber, and my guest today is Miroslav, and we met at Neurips on the airplane. And Miroslav, why don't you briefly introduce yourself to the listeners?
Thank you, Robert. My name is Miroslav Barteki. That's the full name. Shortly speaking, Mirek. That would be even easier to spell. I'm the co-founder and CTO of KYP.ai. My business domain is purely AI. Last 15 years, even without the hype, that was a nice thing to do before. And I'm happily extending that journey with my own startup or maybe scale up right now.
And you are based in Berlin, Cologne, Poland. Where you're based, or you are all around the world?
Mostly around the world, like you do. Then you travel a lot. Although my permanent living location is Tychy, it's close to Krakow in Poland, where we have other offices in Berlin. Then probably I'm also frequently in those places which you mentioned.
You promised to enable analysis from unstructured data or structured data. How do you do that? And what is your business you are doing with your company?
In general, like the topic of the having unstructured data to make them structured. And that's the struggle for most of companies. Number one challenge in this AI industry was to collect the data, having the large amounts solved. Yeah, we have a lot of data, sometimes useless, but at least the quantity is okay. And number two thing is how to make this unstructured data, because videos, audios, and many other samples are unstructured. It means there is no classification or category of what you're looking at or what's collected. And the beautiful stuff is that me and my co-founders thought that the number one challenge for any business, obviously, it defines not only the topic of having this white collar workforce, but also the manufacturing and industrial data. They are also, or maybe, non-structured. Now, I won't refer to the business to consumer market, but if we could recognize everything what our security cameras are recording, that would be amazing, that we'll have only structured data without videos needed.
But it sounds like a process mining approach, or am I wrong?
It's like a combination between the process mining, task mining, and some external additional data like hardware performance. And so maybe small explanation why it's so important to merge these few sources. One source having just process mining data like data from ERP, it is very important. You can have a very granular thing in your scope, and this data would be even structured without having a problem. What's the name of that element or what's that named entity collected? But then you don't see anything beyond the ERP. And as experience teach me, it's about seeing this 99% of processes in any industry, not like 10. My biggest surprise was, and maybe I will revert with a question to you, but please guess how much average company is using SAP and the scale of percentage per day. Like, what would be your guess? 90? No, it's very, very good shot. Is that that's a dream of mine and probably every employee of this industry, but not is like 10-15%.
10-15?
Yes, that's the reality, that you
really
pay a lot of money. Yes, you pay a lot of money for the installation, configuration, and everything what's about, for example, big ERPs. Our best partner, SAP and SAP Signavio, they do a lot of amazing stuff, but reality, how it is used daily, it's counted in percentage. I never seen a company who had that more than 50% daily use. Of course, the perspective changes with the way how you use the system, with the things which you do in, but the biggest contribution was like 30-35%, which I ever saw in any customer of ours. And it's nothing negative. It's just the perception of how much we use this industry leading apps to do our processes.
Maybe it only seems that way because it's so complex and everyone thinks, oh, this is 90% of my work.
Yes, probably that the perception of the human, if you would ask me, or probably the same, we may say what's our core thing, but we really count what we are really doing daily, goes beyond that. That the perception is distracted by our probably brain power busy with something.
But what is your approach? Different sources, where does your data come from and what is your platform able to do?
We collect mainly from two platforms, macOS and Windows. Platforms may be the virtual or physical, that any laptop, virtual desktop environment, Citrix environment, and so on, are sources for our data collection. And that's why the story begins with what you can say it's structured or unstructured, because easy to say we're collecting, for example, the business relevant events from Microsoft Teams recording or Microsoft Teams chat. But when it comes to the image recognition, if you're using this model of jump host or accessing maybe some industrial apps remotely, then you need the vision to recognize what's there. And beautiful things happened last 5-6 years allow us to say accuracy increase like from 20%, which was like 5 years ago, of recognizing what's really on the screen, what the user is doing, to around 70-80% right now, that it's really enough to say what you're doing beyond this famous SAP stuff in your processes. And we try to convert on the end everything to the structured data, because it's very, very difficult to reason on the unstructured. And this data are allowing us to do like the multidimensional classification, aggregation, and so on. Why it's important? The amount of data which you can get from multiple sources is tremendous. Some customers of ours are collecting like 1 terabyte per day. And on the end of the year, they end up like some petabytes of data. Structured data, which sounds to be scary, you need to process that and make some business outcomes. That it's not just data for data, but having them use in the business or being applied for transformation or your businesses.
But making profit out of the data is not your aim, right? You only provide the platform. Am I wrong?
We are providing the platform, conclusions, analytics, and the latest stuff is inputs to agentic AI, that if you have your customized or specialized agent, you don't have to collect the data yourself. We can feed, let's say, the agent with our collected data. And as we collect almost everything what you do electronically with your systems, that should be easy stuff, and I'm hoping when the quality of agents will grow, the good stuff from KYP may be really practical use.
You mentioned ERP system, SAP, etc. You mentioned the whole office world. Where's now the connection when it comes to industrial AI to the shop floor? For sure, we talk about ERP. Do you have a connection to the shop floor then?
Yes, we rarely use that in the sense of the cases, but when it is used, it gives you a really high power to benefit not only in this, let's say, white collar world, but also in the practical manufacturing or the storage or other stuff. Why our data then are combined with, for example, process mining data and this industrial data coming from any other sensors, IoTs, some other type of devices from the manufacturing lines, and so on, that we are providing then the set of our structured data and merge with the unstructured or even structured industrial data. The case here is also the quantity of data versus the industrial one. Let's say taking the oil industry, if you combine number of data from the oil sensor, it's not just oil, but it's about the water and the surroundings, it makes a really useful stuff. Let's say why the change in your oil manufacturing dropped or raised because of certain conditions or weather conditions or the supply chain conditions and so on. I love to see that because it's really end-to-end process, not even applying to one company, because often the external industrial data are given and merged or correlated, more professionally speaking, with our data on the large scale. We have company, I think it's no secret, Olam. Olam is the Singaporean company which delivers every second cup of coffee and many other things around the world. And their supply chain is very, very sensitive to any other conditions, whatever happens on the world with weather or with the leaf. Exactly. that not touching the political topics too much, it may really influence your business. Merging these multiple sources of data, it's amazing stuff.
This is interesting because, as I mentioned, I was at GTC last week, and supply chain and AI was a huge topic over there. So for sure, everybody talked about tariffs and stuff like that, but it was a huge topic. A lot of manufacturers told me, yes, we need to change our production. We need to change our shop floor system because we are not able to sell now, to ship now these components to the US or to Canada or to Mexico. And we are not able to do that in Vietnam or in Poland or in Germany. And this is huge, this supply chain topic, right?
Yep, it was always huge. I remember when I was wondering what should I bet next years to learn, and RFID was the technology which I was doing the date certification, because I thought it's going to solve some supply chain issues, like everything will be tagged with RFID, including one tomato or one potato. Unfortunately, this granularity didn't happen. But as far as I know, every manufacturing line which having more expensive goods like tiles of the floor tiles and so on, they are attaching this kind of tax sensors on the end to everything what they produce. That the jump between what was happening like 15 years ago and now is tremendous. AWS or Amazon as a host company, their storage level is amazing in the sense of automation and sensor equipment. And I believe the trend is growing. Like every company which we have as a customer, we observe, they are trying to equip them with the more sensors, more data, more capabilities to plan the supply chain or processes around that with as much automation as you can. On the end, you may say QAP gives you the transformation hints, like the process mining or process tasks are important. It's not the only thing. That overall, the domain is to transform your business to be as autonomous as possible.
But is your platform then, I would call it, a bridge between shop floor, white collar jobs and the supply chain? Is that a right definition?
Yep. In the past we had a big problem how to name it, because the overall domain is very complex. That's why I'm trying to explain that your performance of your desktop or your production line will impact the process, ROI, and everything what you need to know. That as many sources you can collect, that will drive your business to be more or less profitable. That we came with the idea to name it productivity mining. It's the best what we can get out of it. But explaining in detail as you did is best. That I think you have a natural talent to phrase it very well.
Perfect. So we talked a lot about platform, data platform. But let's talk a little bit about AI. Or are you not interested in AI? You say, oh, we have this platform here. Okay, maybe you can add some agents and some Gen AI stuff. That's your business, dear customers. But which role does AI play in your business model now?
Fortunately or not, it's the backbone of what we do last 5 years from the beginning, because making the data unstructured to be structured, not always or usually you can't do it deterministic way. That we have many mechanisms to make this unstructured data properly classified.
Mm-hmm. How do you do that? Explain a little bit.
Yeah, for example, the recognition of the screen or the recognition of the data semantic behind what you collect, having that deterministic rule, yes, it's doable. Yes, we have that kind of mechanism, but it's very mundane and time-consuming. That it's much easier to say, I'm trying to recognize whatever accept button on the screen or the green tick box as a thing which is approval or consent. In that sense, we are using many models. For example, to recognize what's happening, we use different model. To extract the text out with better accuracy than many OCR or ICRs are doing, we also using LSTMs. And that continues to the analysis and aggregation side. The biggest issue with understanding the large scale of data or large volumes of data is to combine them into single entity. If you wish to know how my chat with you and your chat with other colleagues is similar, you need to know the semantic context. And I know LLMs may help you with that. The problem is that we have many discussions during the day. Many points in our business processes may seem to be similar, but they are not, because of the characteristic. Let's say our talk is a business talk about the industrial data, and the other talk will be about industrial data, but maybe private opinions or maybe some other experiences. And the beauty or the trick is to distinguish that two things, or say it is similar, that server side or the after collection, we are having a big bunch of algorithms which are trying to classify that similarities, aggregate as much as possible in the multidimensional space. And when you have this data, it's all combined, you see that process. We have our own agent, which is called AI Concierge.
AI Concierge, oh.
Yeah.
No AI Copilot.
No Copilot. Copilot is generic thing which helps you to do the interpretation of the structure of your data, answer the question which is about World Wide Web or the company itself. We reason based on our process related data or productivity data, as I said, and try to get the conclusions out of that. The biggest distinguished elements or difference between the typical LLMs and what we do with LLM and other mechanisms, we do a lot of mathematical interpretation. It has to be strict. As you know, LLMs are very poor in mathematics. Better every day. I know some reach like 60% in the complicated mathematics.
But not enough.
But still, if I need to know how much should I pay or what's ROI, it shouldn't be range between $50 and $100 million, because a big range. That we try to be strict with calculations, making the additional algorithms to make this mathematics. And the fuzzy or non-deterministic interpretation of LLMs using this mathematical data, that maths is always confirmed. What you interpret on top of that, sure, it may be hallucinated, but not the numbers. 2 + 2 will be always 4, at least in Euclidean maths, as we do. That this concierge produces the human readable output about the data, about suggestion, improvement, ROI, or even how to convince your boss to hire another person because the process is inefficient because one lady is a bottleneck, couldn't process 5,000 invoices per day.
Or change the supply chain.
Or change the supply chain, or maybe, as you said about the tariffs, disruption observed in the process is the trigger for the action which you should do. That we don't have yet the real-time analytics that way. It has to be driven by you as an operator or as a business analyst or as a manager.
But is that a goal for you to have real-time data?
Yes, we have some blueprint or beta release for the end user perspective, the object of data collection, where we give the real-time analysis, real-time advices, even not asked, because obviously there is a high computing power connected to that, or was before the distillation happened with DeepSeek. Those days we can afford having this in advance conclusion and recommendation. It's more like Google or Apple or others are trying to tell you what's important for you today. That's my summary, that we do that for business. Important that you're going to maybe stretch your spine because you're sitting too long with a desktop, or maybe your goods will arrive 5 days later because we just spotted there's a tariffs applied between the US and Canada.
That's interesting. It's a huge platform, right? Is it running in a cloud environment, I would suggest?
Yep. We support multiple cloud providers, that we are, let's say, cloud agnostic in that sense. The four cloud providers are in our scope. And of course, you can use it on-prem. That's also distinguishing us. If you have high security concerns, you're working in defense industry, healthcare, or maybe some other highly regulated industries, you need to place it in your infrastructure, and we give you that possibility with all of our AI and deterministic components, that you can really cut it off from any internet access and gives you the same functionality.
Let's talk a little bit about use cases. We already talked about supply chain optimization and stuff like that. But what are the main use cases your customers do with your platform?
It's mostly how do I automate and transform my business using this data. I will give you three different examples from three domains. I know it sounds ridiculous those days, but still companies are buying laptops for their employees. And sometimes they overinvest, sometimes they underinvest. The most beneficial example, what we've seen from our analytics engine, was that company was buying very, very expensive laptops for every employee. And utilization of that laptops for the business process, it's very important to say, was around 10%. That, let's say you have a platform which can do the AI real time, but you do the invoice accounting, overpaying, or actually wasting your money for the hardware investment. But in the process context, because there are some monitors, even the task manager can tell you, am I utilized or not? But utilization in the context of your SAP runtime, of your supply chain planning, of your other hardware which you're using, it's important not that your computer is busy because Netflix, I know, movie is right now distilled by you because you want to have a nice summary. That business context of the process and the hardware as an optimization potential. And what our customer does then, they know to whom, because it's not generic that this 10% applies to everyone, to whom to buy the expensive or less expensive hardware. Or opposite way, you are too slow, you have a process bottleneck of your hardware platform, and that will give you the big jump or kick why you will be upgraded with certain parameters. That's the hardware thing, unusual stuff which we never plan to do. But the most important are to mention on the beginning is the transformation capability. How my process looks like, what can I do with my process, and it doesn't matter what's in it. Our biggest customer have like 4,000 applications running in the landscape. And let's imagine that Mirek or Robert is doing this, 35 apps per day as a clicks. That making this manually discovered is a tremendous work and probably no one would wish to do so. We do that automatically. We tell you what needs to be done with your process to make it better. It's number one thing. And number two is what to automate and is it really beneficial. If you remember the hype of RPA from the past, that was a big thing. I believe that robots are...
Now it's agents.
Now it's agents. Exactly. The same pattern. I believe my RPA will help me to drive the automation and I would no longer need a people, or I would need maybe 5% of them because just specialized task has to be done by human. We show you if the technology is not just RPA, it can be workflow or AI or agents. If you're going to spend the million on implementing this thing, if you get the return of your investment, because we apply the measures, how much time it takes you now, what kind of skill set you need, who is doing that, what's involved also on the system level, that everything what is about using this analytics for the good of having good automation or not doing it at all. Because still, if that's return of investment that's happening in 10 years, it's not the good stuff. And with agents, the funny fact is I built an agent 7 years ago, which I was not knowing that it's going to be named agent. It was AI-assisted invoice indexing process. Like some query was coming to the inbox with my previous employer. There was analytics on top of that. The structured data were extracted out of this unstructured attachments and the text. And based on that, let's call that the accounting process happened and some answer to the requestor was given. And that was really my first agent this few years ago. It runs until today. I'm happy to see that was the first working agent. And what was not covered so far is about the exceptions. Not everything can be correctly classified. You have some accuracy levels, some assurance that it's going to be fine, especially with the money. And then you give the human, when you are not certain, even 1%, the approval. Dear operator, please look. this how it looks. Do you trust that this data are right? That I believe in the concept of attended agentics means there is always a human in the loop to give you the confirmation.
So this was your first use case, right? So what is the second and third?
The other use cases are more about customer interaction centers and experience that data collected by us are directly given as an input to the CX agents. Like you can handle the call automatically based on the knowledge base, what this human was operating with, all of the data facts from the systems, and even the industrial unstructured data, because maybe someone is asking, where is my shipment? And it can be B2B shipment, means where is the container of my coffee, or maybe entire ship. And then you can do it, this service automatically, that we can feed you with the data automatically as an example. There are many, many other flavors which you can do agentic automation. Mm-hmm.
So you're really near to the whole supply chain topic, right? That's crucial for a lot of companies, I think, because there's a lot to do, a lot potential for automation, right?
Yep. Generally, we believe the supply chain is one of the first elements in the process, drives the efficiency in the next steps. Obviously, you need to manufacture the stuff. I'm not neglecting this part. Next one is supply chain, and we observed during pandemic what can happen if that's disrupted, that even if you had goods developed or produced, no one to deliver them, then the car shipment delays and so on happen.
So you're also doing a prediction, is that possible?
We're starting on that together with Signavio, because predictive wise you have to rely on the other type of sources, and as
real-time
you
data were asking,
exactly that you need another sources, industrial data, to say what's going to happen.
Third use case?
The third one would be probably the best to say would be about how can I still automate my processes with the traditional, if to name that, technology, combined with agents who can do the thing autonomously for you. But here, let's take this discussion about money or even doing the accounting itself. Not accounting based on the B2B request, but accounting in the books. If you have 100% certainty that your ledger, the general ledger, may be enriched by this automatic accounting, is great. The agent is fed by the data from KYP, and then it may do the automatic accounting, but they are deterministic rules who are trying to check the certainty, approval levels, and all of that stuff, which is about the money, because it has to be up to the 1 cent or $1 accurate, that we are helping to run this agentic execution be more accurate with some conditions or fact checks, which may be very, very important for the compliance and proper accounting.
So you mentioned agents, and maybe you also rely on MCP, right? Or am I wrong?
Not too much. Like MCP is not used by us widely, unfortunately.
But is there a standard? Is there a discussion about a standard? Because when, for example, when we talk about industrial AI, when it comes to connecting machines to each other, that agents communicate, that agents will run machines, will interact with machines, will interact with ERP systems, do we need a new standard there for agents?
Definitely, I would say it's more than required, because right now there is no standard API to do so. While the LLM are trying to do the standardization of the communication, there's nothing happen like that in our, let's say, industry feeding the agentic. Would be amazing. That would be my dream, to have the protocol or standard in that domain. We just need the leader who can get it done.
Yeah, perfect. What are the next steps for you and your company? And which industries do you focus with your solution?
Supply chain was one of the first in the sense of the domain of businesses where we deployed. But right now, there are BPOs, business process outsourcing companies, consultancy companies who are helping to drive many type of businesses. There are healthcare customers, banking grows significantly. That I wouldn't say there is no limit. The only sector which is not our customer yet is the defense. Is it good or bad? I don't know.
A lot of money is in this business, right?
Yes, definitely. Looking on Palantir growth, I'm jealous in that sense.
So do you compare yourself with Palantir? Is it?
No. Okay. I'm just saying that Palantir makes money in the defense sector.
But nobody knows how.
Exactly that. It's even hard to compare yeah. for me. But as I was working in that industry in the past by a few years, very regulated industry, very innovative things behind, but it's a high barrier to get into. Our plans are purely about making this transformation automation so autonomous and so predictive that you as a human, as an operator, won't have to do too much. That you can expect some additional development from our end to equip you as a human for making the proper decision making with that angle, of course, how to make your data working for you, not that you have to work hard every day analyzing.
Miroslav, thanks a lot. It was a pleasure. All the best for you and your guys and your team. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thanks a lot, Robert. You are a great guy and fingers crossed for the further audio recordings.